You can literally walk into a retail store every single day of the year and steal $949 worth of merchandise, and you will never do a minute in jail.
Is it a day or per time? It's per incident.
You can go back.
So you can steal $949 and walk out of that store and go back in and do it again.
Yes. No compounding consequence. The voters, I believe, were duped because the summary and title said it was the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act. So if that's all a person looks at, if you get that sample ballot and you see in this Proposition 47, the Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act, I'm voting for that.
My guest today is John McGinnis. He's the former sheriff of Sacramento County and a radio host in Sacramento. A lot of people are saying Proposition 47 has impacted California by causing the retail theft to increase significantly. And drug addiction and homelessness are on the rise because of Proposition 47. John is here to tell us his perspective on Prop 47. And there is currently a movement to change Proposition 47. And this movement is about to get enough signatures to be on the ballot this November.
Under California law, ironically, rape of the unconscious is not a violent crime. Assault on a peace officer with anything other than a fully automatic weapon is not a violent crime.
Wow.
Domestic violence, with the word violence right in the crime title, is not a violent crime. So we really, truly need some truth and justice in the state of California.
Now, do you have any hopes for the future of California?
I do. The information that's been shared as a result of this effort to fix Proposition 47, I think, has gone a long way to open the eyes and the ears and the minds of California voters, and I hope it stays. The mayors of these blue cities have come out in support of the initiative to fix Proposition 47. So it's not a right-wing initiative by any stretch of the imagination.
I'm Siamak Karami. Welcome to California Insider. John, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
You know, we want to talk to you about Proposition 47. There's some movement in this state to get it back on the ballot, to change it.
Yes.
People have been complaining that this proposition has caused a lot of addiction in the streets. People are doing drugs in the streets. It's contributed a lot to the homeless situation that we have in different counties, from San Diego to San Francisco to Sacramento, where
yes.
you're from.
Yes.
And LA. You were a sheriff of Sacramento County, so you've kind of seen the law enforcement side of this.
Right.
Can you tell us more about what did Proposition 47 do?
Proposition 47 reduced the consequences for a significant number of criminal offenses. Methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine, fentanyl, the date rape drug of all things, all were felonies to possess prior to the passage of Proposition 47. And many of us have a bit of a libertarian streak. In other words, believe that let people do unto themselves what they choose, even if it's a bad idea. But it's foreseeable that the abuse of these drugs will cause problems for other people with whom the offender shares geography. And so the idea of reducing the consequences unto itself, very few people were being incarcerated for personal possession and use of hard drugs at that time. But there was a program, there still is a program, but it's widely underused now, known as drug court. So a person who was arrested back then for possession of methamphetamine, let's say, would actually go to court and stipulate as to their guilt and then take advantage of this program to actually go through a rehabilitation effort. And it worked very effectively. There was a tremendous amount of success associated with that. People would graduate from the program and go on to live healthy, productive lives. I've just talked to two people in the last couple of weeks, one of whom is a journeyman electrician, has a beautiful young family now, and he said he wouldn't be there but for drug court because he was arrested for being under the influence of and in possession of methamphetamine. Obviously, this is pre-Prop 47. He went to court. He said, yes, I'm guilty, but I want to try to get this reduced from my record and not go to prison, and I'm willing to go through whatever recovery programs the court has. So he did, and as a result of that, he turned his life around. Another gentleman who had a very similar experience, he went on to get his teaching credential, and he's now a PE teacher, a physical education teacher. He's a very, very healthy, robust-looking guy, and he's living the dream. He's very, very happy. So they both lament the fact that now nobody's arrested for possession or of hard drugs. They're given a citation, and they overwhelmingly fail to appear in court as a result of that citation. They just disregard it completely. But it's a misdemeanor, so they're never in California going to do any jail time for that. So there's no impetus for them to enter into treatment or rehabilitation. So those people are all lost, and that's why you've seen this tremendous spike in homelessness. Homelessness isn't really the issue. I believe it's a symptom of a larger problem, and that is addiction that has a grip on people in large numbers in this state, and it's destroying the quality of life for people around them, but it's also destroyed their lives. So I think there's a lack of compassion in a system that doesn't call for some assistance to people who are living that lifestyle to help them get back to a productive way of life. In addition to the drug crimes, it lowered the consequences for theft. It raised the threshold to differentiate between misdemeanor petty theft and felony theft to $950. And it also did away with compounding consequences. So prior to Prop 47, there was a penal code section that actually, it was penal code section 666, that said if a person was arrested for and convicted of theft, a subsequent theft would be a felony no matter the value of the merchandise or the item stolen. And there was discretion. There was prosecutorial discretion as well as judicial discretion in that. So very few people went to prison for it, but it was a reminder that you would face larger consequences if you make this your way, your lifestyle. If you live as a thief to get by, it's not going to work, and we will impose consequences on you. Well, now there's no compounding consequences at all. So you can literally walk into a retail store every single day of the year and steal $949 worth of merchandise, and you will never do a minute in jail. It never compounds to a felony. There's no aggregation of those events. So part of what we want to do with the fix of Prop 47 is bring back more serious sanctions for those who are repeat offenders. And in the case of the drug abusers, give them the impetus to go to drug court and treatment. And in the case of the serial thieves, let them know that that's not an acceptable way to live. And there's never been a time in history when it was okay to steal. Never. Go back to biblical times. Go back to 1745 BC. The Code of Hammurabi was established to identify what was not acceptable behavior and what the sanctions would be for breaking the law. So now all of a sudden, in 2014 in California, the voters were told that if they pass this, you'll make a safer environment. Well, and I think there was deception because the Attorney General of the state of California has the responsibility of applying something called a summary and title to these propositions. The summary and title for Proposition 47 was the Safer Neighborhoods and Schools Acts. Well, there's nothing about this proposition.
Who would not vote for that?
Yeah, exactly. We all want that, right? That's if I believed it was the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act, I would have voted for it enthusiastically. But I took the time to read the proposition and saw that it was anything but. And in fact, there's an irony, a very sad irony associated with it. It passed on November 3rd or 4th, I can't remember the exact date, of 2014, but it took effect immediately. So the very next day, Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies were dispatched to a big box store up in Santa Clarita. I don't know if it was a Lowe's or a Home Depot, it doesn't matter. So this guy goes in to steal from this big box store, and prior to the passage of Proposition 47, burglary is defined as entering a lockable structure with the intention to steal or commit a felony. So if I'm invited here to this building, but my plan is, before I come in, I'm going to come in here and steal something. I'm going to steal something from you. And I've established that plan before I come in. I'm not just a thief. I'm a burglar. Well, Proposition 47 changed that. It did away with commercial burglary as a felony. So the sheriff's deputies that responded to that business in Santa Clarita were prepared to book this suspect for commercial burglary because there was evidence that he had planned his theft. He entered the store with the intention to steal and actually committed that theft.
And they caught him, right?
The store employees caught him and detained him. The deputies get there, and they're ready to take him to jail. And they were actually called by a supervisor who said, hey, Proposition 47 passed, so now you can't book him for commercial burglary. You have to give him a citation and release him. He had that citation in his pocket when the suspect went to a local school bus stop where he found a young woman. Seated waiting for a bus in a residential neighborhood. Remember, this is the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act. He abducted her, took her into a nearby field, and raped her and left her for dead. So that is the very day after, and that would not have happened if Proposition 47 hadn't passed. Now, would he go on to live a good life? Probably not. But just the irony of what that so clearly illustrates. This was anything but an effort to increase the safety in schools and neighborhoods. So it's taken 10 years, but I think the public has become very much aware of it. And not only are they aware of how this is playing out, but they're beginning to understand that they were deceived. They were deceived by the members of the legislature, the governor, and the attorney general, who promoted this and supported this. This was supported by then Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and Governor Jerry Brown, as well as the majority of the legislature. So,
was the idea this because some people were going to prison, and a lot of people were going to prison, and then when people would go to prison, they will end up learning bad things there, they will become worse. And was the idea to stop that cycle?
I honestly, I'm not quite sure what motivated them to do that. Some of the justification is that it's very costly to incarcerate people, and it is. I think that needs to be looked at. I think the cost of incarceration
is $100,000 per year.
It's along the lines of what it costs to send a kid to Harvard. So it should obviously it's way out of line. It shouldn't be that much. But I think if you enforce the law efficiently and frankly relentlessly, you wind up with fewer people committing crimes and therefore fewer people incarcerated. And I'll give you an illustration of that. Way back when, there was a very sad case, ironically it was in Sacramento County, where a young girl was killed by a drunk driver. She was a pedestrian on a major thoroughfare and got hit by a drunk driver. Her mother was a woman named Candy Leitner, who started an organization called MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, because she was so outraged by the fact that DUI offenders were be given very light treatment in California. They were not sentenced to harsh consequences for what is known to be very dangerous behavior. There's a good case that serves as an illustration that when you have laws that are clearly understood by the masses and enforced to the letter, you can actually reduce the incidence of criminal behavior. I'll offer a case of DUI in California as an example of that. Way back when, in the early 1980s, a very sad case. A little girl was walking on a major street in Sacramento County, and she was hit by a drunk driver and killed. Her mother, Candy Leitner, was so offended and outraged by the fact that there were minimal consequences imposed on people who were engaged in knowingly very dangerous behavior, drunk driving. So she started an organization called Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Candy Leitner took on a huge notoriety for it. She's had some personal problems of herself since that time, regrettably, and I don't know how she's doing now. She moved to Texas. But she did make a significant imprint on the state of California and called for and got more significant penalties for impaired drivers. And so some of the critics at that time were saying that you're not going to have the capacity to house all these people who are locked up for DUI. Well, the reality is DUI incidents dropped. When people understand that this is unacceptable behavior and you will face consequences for it, they change their behavior. And I think we've seen that in a number of categories. So my belief is if we get Proposition 47 amended to where it actually has some teeth in it again, where the law has teeth again, I think you will find fewer people breaking the law. I think you'll see incidents of drug abuse diminish and incidents of retail theft drop, because it's gotten out of control, completely out of control. And the prevailing belief is you can steal whatever you want and you're going to be all held harmless. And there's frankly, regrettably, a pretty good basis upon which people believe that today, because the law has been so badly gutted that it's very difficult to impose consequences on repeat thieves. So I'm very hopeful, and I've had a chance here in the last several weeks to be among a lot of people who want to change this, who really truly want to make a change. And I'm heartened by a couple of things. There's criticism that this is a right-wing initiative it's a hardcore right-wing propaganda concept. But I find it interesting. A lot of people that have come up to an opportunity to sign this petition to put it on the ballot have actually disclosed voluntarily that they're Democrats. And then I look at the mayor of San Diego, the mayor of Santa Monica, the mayor of San Jose, the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed. All of these mayors are very, very proud Democrats. They've all supported this. And the reason I believe they're supporting it is they've realized what Proposition 47 has done to their cities. If you look at municipal government, they really rely upon the tax base that is developed and created by people engaging in commerce in their communities. So if you have people avoiding the hotels, people not able to go engage in retail shopping and support retail business, and you have a quality of life that's diminished by the loss of recreational facilities like parks and other amenities where that are now have become homeless encampments, which are not just they're not just an eyesore. These are places where, regrettably, the people who occupy them now urinate and defecate in those facilities regularly. They discard their hypodermic needles. We all know the dangers associated with that. So it's a health safety. It's a public health and safety crisis. So I think it's very, very compelling that the mayors of these blue cities have come out in support of the initiative to fix Proposition 47. So it's not a right-wing initiative by any stretch of the imagination. And I actually believe we have enough signatures to get it on the ballot in November. That remains to be seen with certainty. If it does get on the ballot, I think it passes.
There's been a lot of debates on this in the Capitol, and we've been reporting on that. Some of our reporters have been closely watching this. And some of the legislative leaders and also the governor, they don't believe it's the Prop 47's fault that is causing the retail theft. They think there is a group of organized thieves that are doing the retail theft. What are your thoughts on that?
I think there are organized thieves that are doing retail theft, but I think they're doing it because of Proposition 47. Because as a result of Proposition 47, first of all, that felony misdemeanor threshold has gone up. That's undeniable. It went up to $950. And that the fact that there's no opportunity to aggregate those offenses, you go back every single day of the year and engage in the same behavior, you're not held accountable for all of those thefts combined. It doesn't become a felony. So now, I don't think everybody who's stealing, by any stretch of the imagination, is part of an organized crew, but certainly it invites that, and you did not have that before 2014, because generally speaking, most retailers had their own in-house loss prevention people, that is to say, people who were discreetly watching for thieves. They would detain those thieves and hold them for law enforcement. Law enforcement officers would come and actually advise that suspect of their Miranda rights and give them an opportunity to answer questions if they chose to do so with a Miranda advisement. And if it was a simple petty theft, they would give them a citation and release them. If there's evidence that they entered the store with the intention to commit a theft, a burglary, they'd be booked in jail. If the dollar amount was over the felony threshold, which was at different times $200 up to $450, they would be arrested for that. Or if they had a prior theft incident on their history, they would be taken to jail for theft with a prior, a felony. That's all gone now. That all went with Proposition 47, and coincidentally, you have a spike of these retail thefts ever since. I don't think it is a coincidence. I think it's a cause and effect. In addition to that, if you ask the average person who has been in California for over 10 years, how many homeless encampments, how many tents did you see in urban and suburban areas? I can answer the question for you. You didn't see any, mm-hmm. because it was not allowed. Municipal parks, county parks, regional parks were not there for the use of overnight camping, and people would be arrested if they camped out there. It was just not simply not allowed. That's all gone by the wayside as a result of Proposition 47, and the incidents of death on the streets and addiction have just spun out of control. So I would argue with anybody who asserts that Proposition 47 has not played a role in this. I can't get into their head and say what their intentions were. I have a hard time believing that smart, reasonable people would not foresee what this has produced, because it looked very clear to those of us that actually read the initiative, read the proposition, and opposed it publicly at the time for these very reasons, and that's all now come to fruition. So I think we've really done a disservice to the state of California. And it's very interesting, and I find this to be a very compelling statistic. You're no doubt familiar with In-N-Out. They're a very, very successful fast food burger chain, right? It's owned by one company, family owned, and started.
It's one of the best burger chains.
It is, absolutely is. They do very well. They've never closed a store in their history. They've only grown. Well, they just closed their Oakland store, and it was not for a lack of business. On the contrary, it was near the airport and near a business that led a series of law offices where I actually spent some time, so I'm familiar with the venue, and it was busy all the time. But they closed it because they had concern for the welfare of their staff and the patrons, because crime had gotten so bad there. So there is no longer an In-N-Out restaurant in the city of Oakland. Similar thing is true of a Denny's that had been in Oakland for years, and it had to close. So that is all a product of runaway crime. And you can deny it all you want, but the reality is people feel it, they know it, and the people up and down the state, I think, are sensing it. And it's not limited to a particular party ideology. I think it's a broad cross-section of understanding that this has been a terrible failure and it has harmed a lot of people.
Maybe the people that put this proposition together, they didn't really have the on-the-ground practical experience.
I don't know. But I think it's pretty safe to say, and again, if you study history at all, there has never been a time when the propensity to misbehave on the part of human beings was not known, and there wasn't some effort undertaken to address that and to minimize the incidence of that behavior and to impose consequences on those who engage in it. I mean, it goes back, as I say, biblical times. The Ten Commandments, those are rules, right? And so now we have modern statutory law, and there's never been a time when it seemed advisable to reduce the consequences of those kinds of conduct that would have a foreseeable adverse impact on everybody who's affected by it, the business community. Frankly, the public coffers are drying up because they don't have the revenue they once had. The ability for people to live their lives and recreate and enjoy life in a community, that's gone. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that the offenders themselves are suffering as a result of this too. If you think of a young teenager, and they're at that point in life where we all were, where you're probably considering maybe not using the best judgment, and you're tempted to steal something. Maybe the other kids are doing it. Why not do it too? Are they better off if they're caught and held accountable for it on the first incident? Or are they better off if they get away with it time after time? What's the likelihood of them having a bad life going forward? My firm belief is that we have created a generational layer of people who have not had the benefit of the justice system serving them properly. Because when they broke the law, they weren't held accountable, and they became serial habitual thieves, and their lives are not going to be good.
Are you concerned with stock market volatility?
The market's closing in on their worst year since the financial crisis.
Two of the major indices had their worst day since 2020.
U.S. financial markets had their worst day since the start of the pandemic.
Do you really trust this economy?
Rumors are growing that the U.S. economy could be headed for a recession.
Inflation soaring to its highest level in nearly 40 years. Prices for gas and groceries are so high. Inflation sending already sky-high prices soaring even higher across the board.
What if you could invest in a portfolio with a higher fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market? You can turn your monthly income on or off, compound it, whatever you choose, and there is no loss of principal if you need your money back. And absolutely, there are no fees. Just log on to investverify.com. Folks, I personally invest my own money with Verify. Log on to investverify.com or call 888-VERIFY24. Now let's go back to the interview. Now, when you mentioned $950, is it a day or per time?
It's per incident. You can go back. You can walk into
the same store?
Exactly. That's why I say it's taken all the...
steal $949 and walk out of that store and go back in and do it again.
Yes. No compounding consequence. The old penal code section that called for felony consequences for repeat theft is gone. That went away with Proposition 47. So part of what we're trying to bring back in this effort to amend Proposition 47 is after two convictions for theft, the third one becomes eligible for incarceration as a felony after you've done it twice and been convicted twice. So it's not a draconian measure. They still get two. It calls for two times for them to break the law to this degree. Same thing's true with the drug case. But it also will, if it passes, and I believe it will, frankly, and I'll say that on the record, I think it will pass. It calls for the opportunity to aggregate those thefts like you're talking about. So if somebody walks into a Target and steals and walks right next door to Home Depot and steals in the same course of action, those can be aggregated and processed. They can get to the felony threshold that way. So the idea is to deter that kind of activity, to deter that behavior. My sincere hope, if this works effectively, is that you'll actually have fewer people breaking the law. That's the purpose of statutory law, is to disincentivize and discourage criminal behavior. When you get out and you leave here and you get in your car, you drive down the road, you're going to check your speedometer and check the speed limit because you don't want a citation, right? You don't want that fine. That's a very simple version of it, but I think you can play it out to more serious kinds of criminal activity, and it very much applies the same way. You incentivize compliance by imposing consequences for noncompliance.
Now, John, before we get into discussing what you guys did to get these signatures, and can you tell us more about what were you thinking when this passed? Did you think it's going to become like this?
I absolutely did, and I said it on the record because I took the time to read it. I read the entire proposition. I saw exactly what this would do, and we had, this was following a number of years where we had imposed most serious consequences on criminal offenders and actually saw a benefit to that. We actually saw crime going down as a result of what had happened. So, and I looked and said, wait a minute. The one that really hit a nerve with me was the possession of the date rape drug. What purpose does that serve other than to take advantage of somebody who's incapacitated by virtue of a drug that the suspect administers to them against their knowledge and then takes advantage of them in the most egregious way you could imagine? So to minimize the consequences for that, it also reduced the consequences for the theft of a firearm in many cases. So as long as I can remember, the theft of a firearm, value notwithstanding, was a felony. So it could be a really poor quality $50 Saturday night special. If you steal that, it was a felony. Well, that got lumped in with all of the other merchandise. So stealing a gun up to $950 in value, unless it's taken in a burglary or a robbery, but if you leave it in a car, for example, and somebody steals it, that's now a misdemeanor. And I think both sides of the ideological spectrum on firearms should agree that should be a felony. I would think that the people who want to enhance gun control would believe that's terribly wrong. You need to discourage that behavior because you're going to arm felons. And people who are very pro Second Amendment would say, wait a minute, you're depriving somebody else of their Second Amendment right to self-protection, and you're also representative of a crime that would increase the likelihood that a violent crime would follow, right? I don't think most guns are stolen by gun collectors. They're stolen by people who want to commit crimes with those guns. So the absurdity of how this was written, and as I looked at it and I saw more and more challenge, I went public in a loud way, and I elicited the help of a lot of other people in the state to get the word out. And actually, the major newspapers in California opposed Proposition 47. But the voters, I believe, were duped because the summary and title said it was the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act. So if that's all a person looks at, if you get that sample ballot and you see in this Proposition 47, the Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act, I'm voting for that.
So people need to really pay attention to these ballot propositions.
They do.
Read the descriptions in detail.
They do.
I guess the description is pretty accurate, right? The description will give the details.
If you read the full proposition itself, yes. But it does take some time. So I just Proposition 1 was just on the ballot. Proposition 1 put the state in a position of significantly more bonded indebtedness. And there's a little bit of duplicity there as well. They call that an effort to reduce veteran homelessness. Well, as you read through 67 pages of language on what this proposition would do, there's really nothing for veterans in it. And it created huge bonded indebtedness. They call it about $8 billion, but it goes beyond that because there's debt service on that and there's interest on that. It's probably about $10 to $12 billion in bonded indebtedness that I think will do nothing to reduce homelessness. That's what it was supposed to do. So again, now that one was very, very close. And I think I choose to believe that the closeness of the outcome of Proposition 1's election was related in some part to the awareness that people now have because of Proposition 47. I think there were more people that read it and paid attention, so it passed by, I think, 20,000 votes. Very, very close. And Governor Newsom, I think, spent $12 million on
more. I think his PAC had $20 million.
Okay.
And then
okay.
The last few days, it got to $26 million.
Okay, it was a huge amount of money. I think it was $14,000 on the opposition side. But I still kind of see a moral victory in that one because it was very close. It's still a moral victory, is still a loss. But I think if Proposition 1 had been on the ballot 2 years ago, it would have passed by a landslide because people would just look at it, hey, I feel bad for homeless veterans, I want to help, and I'd check a box on that, not knowing what it did. But I went through 67 pages of it, and I wrote 12 pages of handwritten notes out of it, and I shared that with my radio audience and implored them to not be fooled and not vote for it. My hope, and I want to believe it very candidly, is that there is a sense of awakening that is coming, and perhaps we'll make wiser decisions going forward.
Now, John, can you tell us, you've been involved with this signature collecting process for this fixing Prop 47. You call it fixing Prop 47,
yes.
Right?
Yes, fix or amend Proposition 47. That doesn't eliminate Proposition 47, but it does make, I think it ameliorates a lot of the consequences. So it's been a great experience, and it's been about 6 or 7 or 8 weeks now, and I've lost track of time, frankly, but it's what I have been doing. I've kind of put my business on hold, and I'm... I've called for volunteers to help with it, and I've worked with some incredibly great people. Some of the district attorneys in this state, including the DA in San Diego County, the DA in Fresno County, the DA in Sacramento and Placer County, El Dorado County, Yolo County, they have all stepped up and really helped out with this, and some of their staff have been incredible on their own time, going out and helping with the signature drive. And there's a number of people, ordinary citizens, who have seen what's happened here, and they volunteered to come out and help us with this. And it has been remarkably gratifying to see nice people. We had, I think, the biggest single signature event in the state of California, perhaps ever, but certainly on this effort, was at the Roseville Auto Mall, which is a suburb of Sacramento. The Auto Mall is, they've got a variety of different car dealers represented there. They graciously gave us their venue. I broadcast my show live there, and we had 3,000 people come out. There was a 45-minute wait to sign. And I did. I think it did impact some of those car dealers that blocked their driveways and so forth. So I feel bad for that, but I appreciate their generous sharing of their resources. And the beauty of it was, and continues to be, because I'm getting calls still, this brought out the best in people. It really, the people that came out to help, and again, it's not limited to Republicans, not limited to any particular political ideology. People from a broad cross-section of thoughts and ideals were present. They're all universally polite and pleasant and want to do the right thing to help their community. So there's a very nice little community in Sacramento called Land Park, and they are experiencing something that's very illustrative of what they're dealing with, of what this all represents, because their community is, if you could envision, just like little gingerbread houses. Just there's not a yard or a home that's not well kept in that entire community. Beautiful place, uniquely so. But the surrounding area is really, truly decaying rapidly. A lot of businesses have closed. The retail stores have to lock up their merchandise. And so they're seeing the effects of that, and the people who live in this community want very much to keep this at bay and preserve what they have. So I refer to them as my Land Park Army, and they've come out and helped very, very, very selflessly to get signatures. And I got to give a shout out to, by the way, I didn't know these people prior to this effort, and now we're
friends. We've actually covered some of their stories on the show as well.
Yes, and they're great people. And a gentleman by the name of Garrett Hamilton, who's an assistant chief deputy district attorney in Yolo County, he's taking vacation time, not to go to Hawaii or to go skiing in the mountains, no, to go out and work on this effort. He's driving around everywhere, picking up petitions, coordinating the signing events, and giving of himself, because he has a front row seat as a prosecutor to see exactly how badly things have deteriorated and what an absolute undeniable failure Proposition 47 has been. So rather than just wringing his hands and complaining about it, he's jumped in to try to help. And that's, I think that's laudable activity.
And doing that to help the state, right? Essentially doing
precisely. It's not going to put another nickel in his pocket. This is to make the state of California a better place.
You were sheriff 14 years ago. How's it now versus when you were doing the sheriff role?
It's changed, not because I'm no longer the sheriff, but the respect for law enforcement has changed enormously, and frankly, the effectiveness of law enforcement has been compromised. A couple of things have happened. Proposition 47 is a big part of that, but there's also something called the Ferguson effect. If you remember the Ferguson shooting, Michael Brown, and then of course George Floyd thereafter, and a number of other significant events. There was a shooting of a young man in Sacramento that was similar, Stephon Clark. was very widely criticized. It turned out to be absolutely a lawful shooting on the part of the police. Everything about it was cleared by the local district attorney, by the attorney general of the state of California, as well as the U.S. attorney. All said, no, this is an appropriate use of force. But there was a long delay in getting that investigation resolved and sharing that information publicly. So there was a lot of unrest in the city and the surrounding areas, in fact, all over the state and perhaps across the nation. It has sent a chilling effect on law enforcement, plus the fact that we're dealing with ongoing early release of offenders in the state of California. Proposition 47, and then the next thing that came along was Proposition 57, which reduced the time that convicted felons would spend in custody. And if you have time, I'll tell you a story. There was a young man by the name of Brock Turner. I don't know if that name rings a bell to you, but he was the Stanford swimmer who found a young woman right off of campus who was, by her own admission, inebriated. She had had way too much to drink and was largely passed out. He saw her and decided that would be a good person to take advantage of by sexual abuse. So he did so. And so he was convicted of that and sentenced to 6 months in jail. And she actually shared a victim impact statement in court that greatly detailed the extent to which he destroyed her life. And she was always also very forthcoming and said that, hey, I put myself in this position. I voluntarily and regrettably put myself in a position where I could be taken advantage of. But that doesn't give him a pass. This was in Santa Clara County. And the voters in Santa Clara County were so outraged by this that they actually recalled that judge from the bench. They said that this is unacceptable. He's not administering the law properly. They removed that judge from the court. Ironically, on that same ballot, Proposition 57 was there, which was billed as an effort to keep the most hardened prisoners in custody. That was what they called it, the most hardened criminals in custody. What it did was give the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation the authority to release people early. So what happened on that same ballot where the judge was recalled for that sentence, which I believe was improper, was way too light. And by the way, the reality was 6 months becomes 3 months because they get good time credit. So think about this. Think about a school kid getting out for summer vacation in late May, early June. Think how fast that time goes before they have to go back to school in the fall. That's how long Brock Turner spent in jail for violently sexually violating this young woman, which is just egregious. It's a horrible thing. But the voters didn't read the ballot language because the voters in Santa Clara, if you just take that as a snapshot, while they discharged that judge, in that county, they also passed Proposition 57, which normalized that kind of a sentence. That's the consequence now. Under California law, ironically, rape of the unconscious is not a violent crime. Assault on a peace officer with anything other than a fully automatic weapon is not a violent crime.
Wow.
Domestic violence, with the word violence right in the crime title, is not a violent crime. So we really, truly need some truth and justice in the state of California. I'm hopeful that there's going to be this has sparked something now that will bring about a collective interest in how business is done. And of course, looking at all of this in the context of this very recently published audit on the expenditure of homeless dollars, that is to say dollars theoretically expended for the purpose of reducing incidents of homelessness that has done absolutely nothing. And there's no idea where that money went. It's not properly tracked. It's not memorialized. Nobody knows to the tune of $24 billion where those proceeds went. So I want every Californian to know that your money is being managed in this manner. And my regret is, my concern is that I think people hear about it for a second and they go on to thinking about something else and they don't think about it again. They don't fully contemplate that when they sit down with their ballot to vote. But I want to get that awareness, and I don't really care about political ideology. I just don't care. I want people who will be honest and forthright and manage resources properly and ensure that justice is properly served.
Now, John, from what it looks like, you've spent a lot of your time to volunteer for this initiative. Why are you doing all this?
Because this is, I see it as a kind of a last-ditch hope for this state. I don't want to over-dramatize it, but the state of California has lost a congressional district. For the first time ever, this is not the place people are seeking to live. We have more people leaving than coming to California. The amenities here that drew us here, the tremendous diversity. I mean, you can be skiing in the mountains in the morning and visiting at the beach in the afternoon in California. That's still there. It's still beautiful amenities, beautiful weather. That hasn't gone away. So there's a reason why people are leaving. And if you look at the people who are leaving, it's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of leaders, a lot of people who have actually contributed to the good things in California are now leaving. I'd love to see that stop. And this is kind of my hope at this point. The state's been good to me. I love the state. But I am also among those who, frankly, have given thought to leaving. And if we can't get some recovery, I think probably it's the thing to do, because you're only put on this earth for a finite period of time. And I would rather spend my time, you know, fighting a legitimate hard fight to make it better, or finding someplace where things are not so crazy. Because this, we've lost so many different dimensions here. And by the way, to kind of build on the homelessness expenditures and the audit of that, I absolutely believe that everything they have done is wrong, because they're seeking to theoretically resolve a symptom of a problem. They're saying these people are homeless, so we're going to endeavor to find them homes. That's not the problem. It's a result of something that's broken within them. They are, I think, overwhelmingly addicted. There's a gentleman who's written a book called Hope Dying, or Hope Diminishing. His name is Sherman Haggerty, and he was a very, very successful home builder in Texas. And he came to California, and he volunteered at an organization called Volunteers of America. And he actually wound up directing a portion of that effort to help people through addiction, frankly, and get them onto the path of self-reliance and a better life. His estimation is 85 to 90% of the people that are living that lifestyle is because of dependency, substance abuse. So why don't we go after that rather than trying to fix the symptom of the problem? You still have the broken person that will not thrive even if you provide them with a home, which frankly won't work. I think of the $24 billion that were spent in a five-year period of time, $24 billion taxpayers' precious dollars that could have been put to so much better use. And I'd love to see, when people are in custody for breaking the law, have them subjected to training and education that could help put them in a better path. If they're going to get out of custody again, I want them to be armed with all of the things that they need in order to thrive as an independent member of society, to learn a skill or a trade, and learn how to present themselves for employment. The reality is we're dealing with now third and fourth generation people who have never known a positive role model in their life, never, especially, frankly, never a positive paternal role model. And so they think the only way you get by is to prey on others. And that's frankly the lay of the land. So why don't we work on fixing some of the problems that have contributed to this mess, rather than trying to mask over it by addressing the symptoms?
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com. Now, based on what you've seen, John, you've been in California for a long time. You built your whole career in Sacramento area, right?
Right.
And what was the values of the society back in the day compared to now?
It was vastly different. And by the way, I think California was coming off the tracks a little bit in the early 1990s. But there was a time when If people misbehaved, they would be held accountable for their action. And there were programs to help them while in custody. We had a jail facility that had welding programs. They learned to weld. They learned some basic auto mechanic skills. We actually had a horseshoeing program. So there's still people in different parts of the state that have horses that need the services of a farrier. So put people through training to give that skill to them, and they could get out. And some of those people have actually been the subject of some media coverage and have done very well. But you have to hold the consequences first, right? And so we saw a period, as I said, in the 1990s when that was starting to slip. And that was when the voters, the public, became incensed and push for and promoted and passed three strikes and you're out. And what happened then? We saw incidents of criminal conduct absolutely plummet. But over time, we've dismissed some of that, a lot of that. Most of three strikes is gone now. It's eviscerated by the legislature and some of these votes by the public that have said, nah, we're not going to do business that way anymore. I think a lot of it is the proposition concept has been abused with disingenuous summaries and titles. And we really truly lost our way. We no longer have a justice system that recognizes what its fundamental purpose is. And all of this is very interesting because while we've pushed tens of thousands of inmates out of the state institutions onto the streets in your neighborhood, the cost, the budget for the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, which by the way does neither, has gone up.
Wow.
So how does that make sense? And I understand people are trying to do good things and they're working hard and they're raising their kids and they're involved in youth sports and all sorts of activities, structured lifestyles, very busy. So when it comes time to being informed and recognizing their role, the voters' role in our society, they're at the very top of the organizational chart in government. They call the shots. They determine what propositions get passed. They determine who represents them in the legislature. They determine who's in the executive branch of government, serving as the attorney general and the governor of the state. And if I'm afraid we have really truly not done well in that regard. The information that's been shared as a result of this effort to fix Proposition 47, I think, has gone a long way to open the eyes and the ears and the minds of California voters. And I hope it stays. I really truly hope. That the vast majority of people, I'd love to say everybody, takes the time to read this auditor's report on the squandering of $24 billion taxpayers' dollars to fix homelessness. If it had fixed homelessness, maybe it would be worth it. Not only has it not fixed it, it's gotten worse.
Now, John, do you think the public is the same as before? Do you think the values of the public in California is similar to the 90s, or do you think it's changed significantly? Or the problems we were seeing is connected to the values that we have?
It's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with the proposition process and this summary and title. And under California law, the responsibility of identifying the summary and title, what are we going to call Proposition 47? That's the job of the Attorney General of the state. And that's a partisan office. And there was a time, I can tell you personally, from talking to when Dan Lundgren was the Attorney General and his chief deputy was a man by the name of Dave Sterling. Dave Sterling was the chief deputy, and part of his job was to actually write the summary and title on propositions, and he painstakingly researched things to make sure he got it right. He had his own opinions, but he wanted to make sure that the summary and title matched what the proposition would actually do. That's gone by the wayside now. You have outright dishonesty in terms of how these propositions are titled. When you say that Proposition 57 will keep the most hardened criminals in custody, when you're letting a lot of them out. And part of what came out of Proposition 57 was, suppose you have somebody who's a career of violent criminal offender, and on their last arrest, a couple of years ago, they took advantage of a deal. They pled guilty to a paper crime as a part of their crime spree, and that was supposed to land them in custody for the rest of their life. The DA said, okay, this works. It's cost effective for the taxpayers. They don't have the burden of a trial. That person is now out because they only looked at his most recent crime. They didn't look at his full criminal history. If you hear about a major crime, I challenge everybody to look at this. When you hear about a major crime that takes place and it's solved, the person responsible is identified and in custody shortly after the crime takes place, I'm willing to bet that the vast majority, if not all of those, are people who are early releases from custody. There's an absolute abundance of foreseeability that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So if we lock people up for a period of time and warehouse them with others who share the same propensity for misconduct, and now we let them loose early because somewhere along the line somebody thought it was a good idea and they persuaded a sufficient number of the voters to go along with that through a disingenuous summary and title on a ballot measure, that person is going to be out in your neighborhood. And that's what we've seen. That is exactly what has happened. Reoffenses are the norm. So when I started there, I think there was a greater recognition. And I don't know that the electorate have changed. I don't think they get as much legitimate information as they once did. I'm thrilled to see the Epoch Times take the position they have. They're filling a void that I think doesn't exist anymore. In spite of all of the modes of communication that exist now, I don't think the public has ever been less informed. And I find that to be frustrating. Back when, there was three local news stations. Most towns had two daily newspapers. That was it. And I think the people were much better informed. They knew what was going on at City Hall. They knew what was going on at the County Board of Supervisors. And if it got bad, they would let their voices be heard. I don't think that awareness exists anymore to a large degree. And that's hurting us.
Now, do you have any hopes for the future of California?
I do. And I hate to be redundant, but this what I have seen, what I call the big awakening, as a result, a couple of factors here, a couple of dimensions. First of all, people are seeing what they're seeing with their own eyes, in spite of what the governor and others may tell them about the fact that, no, Proposition 47 hasn't hurt anything. They're seeing that all of a sudden their neighborhood, the area where their office is, their business is, the places they frequent, is littered with homeless encampments and tents now. They're seeing that. They're also hearing the term rip and run retail theft, smash and grab thefts. They didn't hear those terms before Proposition 47 passed. So there is a discernible change in terms of how people are behaving. I think they're believing what others might call their own lying eyes. And so as a result, people from different political persuasions, again, I think it's important to note, London Breed, the uber left mayor of San Francisco, California, who is a big proponent of defunding the police, actually signed on our petition because she's trying to balance the city's books in San Francisco with diminishing resources because people are not buying there anymore. They're not staying in hotels in San Francisco as they once did. It's not the convention capital it once was. It's not the tourist destination it once was. So I had occasion to speak to a group in San Francisco, it's been a few years ago now, before the pandemic, and it was at a venue where they tried to give me an opportunity to park in their parking structure, but I got there a little bit late and it wasn't available. So as I went in and introduced myself and I was getting ready to go speak, a gentleman came out from behind a corner and said, hey, I was not eavesdropping, but I heard what you're talking about. They told me to park, I could park on the street. And he says, if you park on the street, leave all four windows open and don't leave anything of value in your car because they will get in your car. Then he explained to me that he was a captain with the San Francisco Police Department. And I appreciated his counsel, and I took it. When I left there that night, I walked past two cars, each of which had one window smashed out. So, but you think about the idea, we're living in a world, and again, I'm not knocking his counsel, I appreciate it, but where a police captain is telling somebody to not lock their car because it's inevitable that they will get in your car. The question is, how much damage do you want to endure as a result of that? So things are broken. And anybody who tells you otherwise is being disingenuous. But I just sense, and I will be very candid with you, is with an abundance of hope that there is a bit of an awakening.
So, John, do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll try to narrow it to this. And I would just implore the viewers and people who read the Epoch Times to pay attention, to really use your critical analysis, your ability to recognize when you're told something by an office holder, a politician, to engage in skepticism. It's not disrespectful to do that. Push back on it. You push back on some of my assertions today. I welcome that. I think it's good and appropriate. And that's your job, right? You're interviewing.
Because we want to make sure it's
right.
Get the right information.
Absolutely true. And by the way, I would love to debate some of these things with people who see it from the opposing point of view. And I find it interesting that they're disinclined to debate. I want to share what I have a passionate belief in, and I would think that those who think that Proposition 47 was a good thing would want to do the same, but they don't seem to want to. So I just implore the audience to engage in critical analysis, to be skeptical, and to confer with others, and maybe occasionally read an opinion piece that might be something that would open your eyes. I found it significant that the major newspapers in California did oppose Proposition 47. I think newspapers, frankly, in many of cases, local papers have lost a lot of what they had at one time, and they've given it up. There's a reason why it's gone. But that was also...
They had better investigative reporting back in the day, they were more critical.
They were more critical, and they were less inclined to...
And that's what we were doing with the show, and Epoch Times is like that. We're trying to hold government leaders accountable for the public.
That's the job, right? But I think so much in the case of the local newspapers, they've gotten to be propaganda for their own points of view. There was just a very recent piece that came out by a senior person at NPR that talked about the one-sided nature of ideology at National Public Radio, which is publicly funded, ironically. It was terrible.
It had such big credibility with everyone, NPR.
Yeah, but not with good reason. There is no critical thought there. There's no skepticism. There's no pushing back. That's what we need. That's what makes for a healthy society.
John McGinnis, former sheriff of Sacramento County, it was great to have you on California Insider.
The pleasure is mine. Love to be back again.